KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Mateo.
San Francisco, Mission Dolores Park.
Financial District near the Tenderloin.
San Bruno.
North Sunnyvale.
Downtown Palo Alto, my beloved.
Redwood City.
Coming up, we'll visit a school that helps girls who've experienced trauma trust, learn, and thrive.
The vibes in there are just comfortable. It's just respect. You're getting told good morning every day, you know? And I just start feeling comfortable. When I feel comfortable, it makes me want to stay.
Then an Oakland musician transformed her career after motherhood.
Honestly, you know, I think that having my daughter kind of, I got a glow up with her.
And the story behind one of San Francisco's architectural curiosities.
I think it was quite a popular building, but there was also some merriment directed toward it.
That and more today on Cross Currents. We've all heard about the struggles that many African-American boys face nationwide, getting suspended and expelled from school, losing faith in themselves, winding up in trouble. It's known as the school-to-prison pipeline. Well, girls of color, particularly black girls, grow up with similar challenges and biases in the classroom. They're kicked out of school at higher rates than other girls. Quite a few wind up in jail. But in Oakland, these girls are starting to get the kind of targeted attention that advocates think they need to believe in themselves and to thrive. A novel school program for girls only recently held its third graduation ceremony. Education reporter Lee Romney brings us the story of one of its teen students and what this innovative school means to her.
This is awesome. Congratulations, graduates. We are also proud of you.
In a crowded meeting hall in Oakland's Preservation Park, five teenage girls are about to receive their high school diplomas from a new program called Emerge.
So please help yourself to some food in the back, and then we'll get the program started just in a little bit. Thank you so much.
This graduation starts with a feast, a long buffet table with catered platters of barbecue chicken, candied yams, and greens.
My name is Florida, and I'm 16 years old.
She's beaming in her black cap and gown with a colorful flower lei around her neck. We're only using Florida's first name because she's involved in the legal system.
I was in and out of jail. So, like, you know, my grandma wouldn't have thought, like, this day will really come how it came. Like, I don't know, I just feel so proud of myself because it's like I've been through so much.
Florida came to Emerge this past February, and for the first time in years, she excelled at school. She's only 16, but she finished all the graduation requirements in a matter of months. She wants to go to a four-year college, but first, she'll take next year off to work, help her grandmother, who raised her, and get ready for the SATs.
And what is your GPA?
3.97. I wish it was a 4.0. I need three more to get up to a 4.0, but I'm there.
Her favorite subject is history, and she's got big plans.
Yeah, of course. I want to become a lawyer. I've been dreaming of that since my grandma said I was seven, telling her I wanted to become a lawyer, going to the library, getting the biggest books, all the law books. And I want to help kids also, like an attorney, but like working with kids.
To understand what a big deal this is, it helps to know a bit about Florida's difficult relationship with school. Back in grade school, her teachers crafted a special education plan for her, but it wasn't for a learning disability. It was for emotional disturbance because her behavior was so disruptive. That plan was supposed to get Florida the support she needed, but school was a disaster.
They didn't have patience for me. They thought that I was a bad kid, a bad person.
She was expelled from eighth grade, and at the next school, things just got worse. She says she felt disrespected and misunderstood.
I wouldn't do my work. I would walk out of class. It got to the point I started throwing their computers outside the window. I just got so angry because it's like, it feels like I have not learned anything. Like, it felt like my brain is more fried than it was before.
Florida hated school. She says she was running with a rough crowd. At first, it was about fun, but it landed her in lockup.
As a kid, I don't know, as a female, young female, like, in this, nowadays, all that matters is boys, money, drugs. You know, that's all that matters to females nowadays.
Kelsa Sneed is executive director of the Mentoring Center, the nonprofit that runs Emerge day to day. She says pretty much all of their students have experienced trauma.
A number of the girls are commercially sexually exploited or at risk of being that. A lot of the girls are, have difficult family circumstances. A lot of them can't go home or don't have a home to go to.
The goal of Emerge, she says, is to create a healing learning environment for them with tons of support. Being away from boys helps the girls let their guard down. Sneed and a small group of advocates created the program to respond to the needs of girls of color. Education researcher Monique Morris was among them. She was interviewing girls in juvenile hall for her book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. And she was convinced the whole approach at schools was pretty much upside down. Here she is, speaking to KALW's Your Call 2 years ago.
Oftentimes, as educators, we'll enter the classroom and say, these are my rules, deal with it, instead of saying, okay, what do you need to be present today, right? What do you need to be an effective learner? We don't often engage that question from the very beginning. I have found that when we do that, particularly with girls, with Black girls, they respond because they feel that you see them.
Federal statistics show that compared to other groups of girls, African American girls are disproportionately punished the most in school. They're suspended, expelled, and referred to law enforcement. And Morris says it's not necessarily because they're bad kids. Many girls she interviewed at juvenile hall told her they got in trouble just for asking questions.
And they were seen as being disruptive, called annoying, and their act of critical thinking was viewed as an affront to the authority of the educator.
Morris wanted these girls to have a radically different experience. So she turned to Karen Monroe, superintendent of the Alameda County Board of Education, which runs alternative schools countywide. Monroe instantly got on board and provided some funding and a teacher who could connect with these girls. It's her office that issues the Emerge diplomas.
To know who they are as individuals, not just as objects or caregivers or a girlfriend or what the media says that they should be, takes a significant amount of investment.
Emerge holds classes at Girls Inc. of Alameda County. Its downtown Oakland building is a big, modern space with tons of light. The students partake in all that Girls Inc. has to offer: mental health services, after-school leadership and college prep programs, a yoga studio, and a kitchen. But when Florida first got to Emerge, she was not thrilled.
I didn't like it because it was like, it was all females. It was nothing to do. You know, it wasn't like a school where it's noise and crowds and everything jumping. It was just quiet.
It was everything that school had never been for Florida. But soon, she grew to love it.
As I started going and cooking classes and field trips and just all these adventures, you know, my teacher she's just awesome. I don't know, she makes me want to come to school. Not even that, it's just her vibe. Like, the vibes in there are just comfortable. It's just respect. I don't know, you getting good morning, you getting told good morning every day, you know. I don't know, quiet for me to get my work done. And I just start feeling comfortable. And when I feel comfortable, it makes me want to stay. It makes me want to stay where I am.
Florida still has a lot of healing to do.
It's like I got a lot buried deep down inside me.
There's stuff, she says, she's just not ready to talk about. Her dad died when she was one, and her mom hasn't been in the picture much.
I think them was the two biggest things that hit me hard. And me being on my own, me having to be on my own for a year.
That was last year, because Florida's grandmother lost her apartment.
Me and my grandma, we was homeless. Yeah, we was homeless.
They split up for much of that time, and Florida says it was really rough. But just before last Christmas, her grandma found a new place. And thanks to Emerge, Florida's whole outlook is changing. I asked her what she used to think about her future.
To be honest, I thought I was going to be dead. I thought I was going to be dead before I really hit my future. That's real talk. I really thought I was going to be dead. I didn't even think I was going to pass 17, 18, just because of the things I was doing back then.
And now you're going to be a lawyer?
That's what I am going to be. That's what I will become.
When the ceremony starts, Florida is first to receive her diploma.
I'm so glad. I don't know who named her Florida, but she's sunshine, honey. Let me tell you. Okay? Let me tell you about Florida.
Randa Powell, the Emerge program coordinator, recalls getting a thick intake file on Florida, detailing her every mistake and behavioral incident. But she didn't let it get in the way of knowing the real girl.
Right. And so when I got one of those for Florida, okay? And I didn't read it.
That's right. Hello.
Oh, you didn't read it?
No, I didn't read it.
Yeah,
read it. That's right. I read a little, I skimmed through it a little bit, but all that doesn't have anything to do with who she is.
Florida's grandmother is there, snapping pictures and cheering. So are Florida's sisters and cousins and her boyfriend. And when Florida stands up to talk, she's elated.
I might not be proud of myself for making the decisions that I have made, but I am proud of myself. No, I will be proud of myself of becoming and overcoming and bettering myself. I'm just proud of myself, you know?
Emerge plans to stick with Florida next year to make sure she gets into college. And they're working on scaling up, knowing, seeing, and educating many more young women like her.
I'm proud of you too, baby girl. You made everybody cry up in here.
For Cross Currents, I'm Lee Romney.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Oakland singer-songwriter Zakiya Harris performs under the name Shapeshifter. She came to that name and her musical career when her personal and professional life fell apart. On this edition of Bay Area Beats, Zakiya tells us about how she came into her own as Shapeshifter.
Shapeshifting is a mantra of sorts that was really gifted to me when I went through a major transition in my life. Within a few years, I went from being married to divorce, went from being a homeowner to a victim of foreclosure, went from running a successful nonprofit that had 10 amazing staff to laying everybody off, went to having a job to not having a job. And so I realized that, you know, who do you become when all these parts of your identity are stripped away from you? Homeowner, mother, wife, etc.
Take me away for more of the same. I can't take it no more.
Shapeshifting became like a guide to kind of get me through. And it really is a reminder to all of us that we need to just continue to stay in the flow, and that what might seem like a struggle at the time could be one of our greatest gifts. And I really recognize it as that now. I would describe my music as Afro-eclectic. So it's definitely got some black in it, that's the Afro, but it's eclectic. It's global, it's many different sounds.
Stand true, no matter what they tell.
The juxtaposition of many different types of music and sounds really is a reflection of my journey as an artist. I am a child of the South. I was born in Richmond, Virginia, so that black church element is there, but my parents raised me in Oakland, California. Like many folks from the South, kind of migrating north, and the sounds that we create there, whether it's the sounds of Motown and jazz music, and being from a place like Oakland, the Pointer Sisters, or, you know, hip hop, Too Short, Hieroglyphics, like all of those sounds shaped my notion of music. But then I also went to school back east and realized there was a whole African diaspora. People ask me all the time how I'm able to wear so many seeming hats as a mother, an artist, an entrepreneur, and really having a daughter changed my life tremendously. For me, it definitely made me super clear on what I do and what I absolutely don't do, what I'm willing to say no to. And honestly, you know, I think that having my daughter kind of, I got a glow up with her in terms of making more money, stepping into my power more, and even, you know, going through my divorce. When you know that you have to take care of somebody, failure is not an option, and you do what you need to do. And so that strength and perseverance has kind of guided me in my business and other aspects of my life. And so I say all the time, she is my greatest teacher.
Shapeshifter, her name, self-love, her claim to fame, African, who knows her name, which stay up in.
When I gave birth to my daughter, who's now 12, and I decided I'm not going to compartmentalize who I am. I'm going to show up being myself in every room that I walk in. And so I think that when you walk in your authenticity, you actually empower others to walk in theirs as well. Black woman is God. Sometimes I talk to students in Oakland and I'm like, I'm from Oakland. And they're like, no, you're not from here. You don't look like whatever they think an Oakland girl looks like or talk like an Oakland girl is supposed to talk like, or they think I'm from another country. I'm like, I'm from East Oakland. This is where I'm from. If young people don't see other visions, they don't know what's possible. I see my role as an artist is to disrupt the status quo. So I am here to destroy all of the things that are not serving us, and I'm here to help build and midwife this new earth and this new nation. Specifically as Black women, we play a very important role on the planet, and the images that we're putting out, whether it's Wakanda or Beychella, it's inspiring the globe.
That was Akia Harris, a.k.a. Shapeshifter. Find more info about her and her music at KALW.org. That story was produced by Jackie Sajiko and Jen Chien. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. KALW listener Chan Rogers has always been curious about a certain salacious shadow on the Cathedral of St. Mary of the Assumption on Cathedral Hill here in San Francisco. So he reached out to Hey Area, KALW's collaborative reporting project, with this question.
I've often wondered if the breast-shaped shadow that appears on the southern side of St. Mary's Cathedral was a very clever architectural prank or just an accident.
KALW Audio Academy Fellow Amber Miles collaborated with Chan to bring us this story.
St. Mary's Cathedral has a unique concrete design. Its simple square base twists skyward to form the shape of a cross, making the cathedral stand out as one of the city's most recognizable landmarks.
I've always been impressed with it because of its modern design. I mean, this is an amazing, interesting building, a very complex form.
That's Chan Rogers, our question asker and my collaborator on this. He's a semi-retired academic, an avid architecture enthusiast, and a bit of a history buff.
Of course, Herb Cain, who was Mr. San Francisco in many ways when he was still writing his column in the Chronicle, made a lot of good, lighthearted fun of the building, where he called it Our Lady of Maytag.
There are many monikers associated with St. Mary's, but one of the most titillating references the regular afternoon appearance of a breast-shaped shadow on its sweeping concrete roof.
Yes, you're referring to the 2 o'clock...
Yes, that's it.
Okay, it sounds like something school kids would come up with, doesn't it?
Yes, the 2 o'clock which brings us to the question we're trying to answer. Is the shadow on St. Mary's a happy accident or a clever architectural prank?
I'd like to think that it was intentional, because if so, it was really brilliant.
Our first thought was to track down the architects responsible for the cathedral's design.
Sadly, they'd all passed on to the great drafting table in the sky.
So we expanded our search. I made a trip down to the Department of Building Inspection at 1660 Mission Street in SoMa.
I wanted to go up to the records department.
Okay, that's be the fourth floor.
Cool, thank you.
And the records department actually had reams of good stuff from St. Mary's. old blueprints and building documents, all on microfilm.
This is the first page of 140.
As I scan through the film, something in the right-hand margin of the blueprint catches my eye. Names. Etched there all tight and white in minuscule lettering. I crank the lens and zoom in. Among the names of the senior architects I already knew of, I see a new one. A project architect named William Chappell. Brilliant. I found a handful of numbers for William Chappell online.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
At no additional charge, AT&T can help you find a similar business in the same area.
I was down to the last number.
This is Chappell's. Please leave a message.
Hi there. My name's Amber Miles.
At the beep, I left a message and crossed my fingers, hoping it would reach the right William Chappell.
I'm William Chappell. I was the project architect on St. Mary's Cathedral.
Bingo. Chen and I met William at his modern Mission Bay apartment complex, and he informed us that it was Pietro Bellucci, an Italian-born architect and dean of MIT at the time, who was ultimately responsible for the cathedral's design, which uses something called a hyperbolic paraboloid. It's a complicated geometric form. Chen is a great visual.
Well, sometimes it's been compared to the shape of a Pringles potato chip. The hyperbolic paraboloid is a very interesting shape, and architects love this because you can build these very gracefully shaped, smooth surfaces using only straight building components.
Basically, to build the roof, Bellucci took two of these Pringles and broke them into quarters. He then used two quarters to construct each concrete arm of the cross, and in doing so, created a structure that would, intentionally or not, cast the now famous breast-shaped shadow.
It made quite an impact on the city, and I think it was quite a popular building, but there was also some merriment directed toward it by people like Herb Cain.
The Maytag or the...
Exactly, Our Lady of Maytag.
That's right.
So, William was at least familiar with some of the good-natured jokes around St. Mary's, but did he know about the shadow? The time had come to broach the breast. But before either of us could say anything, William beat us to it.
And then the shadow at times looks like the breast of a woman.
And that was all Chan needed to dive into his theory on the shadow.
I think it's brilliant.
It is.
What could be more appropriate to a church dedicated to the Blessed Virgin than the shape of a human breast? Now I have to make a little confession. This is partly what prompted my question to KLW. Because kind of mischievous.
Chan explained to William how he likes to believe someone must have known about the shadow before the building went up.
I picture an architect's office with a bunch of junior level architects doing all the hard work, all the drafting.
That's it.
And that one day, one afternoon, one of them was looking at a model they just built and passed a task lamp over the model and saw the shadow, got a good laugh out of it, shared it with all of his peers, and then they agreed not to tell the boss.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't know this until the paper brought it up.
Okay. Yeah. See, because you would have been that junior architect.
Oh, right.
So you're telling me my fantasy is evaporated. It's gone.
So, the shadow may not have been a purposeful prank, but at least its last living architect found it as entertaining as the rest of us. There was only one more logical thing we could do. Host a ceremonial shadow viewing party. Chan invited some fellow architecture lovers, and seven of us gathered on the corner of Rose and Octavia Street.
Hey, Amber.
Hey, I'm Mike.
Nice to meet you.
See, the shadows are still forming.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Of course, what we're about to see, well, they've referred to this phenomenon as the 2 o'clock.
It was a bright day, and the shadow was clearly visible.
So what is the...
I wouldn't call it breast-like, exactly. Not yet, anyway. It was more pointy than perky, topped with a hard edge that jutted out diagonally across the cathedral's roof.
But right now, it's very triangular. And I've seen it at times, so it's much more roundy.
It's almost there now.
Yeah, it's coming along.
We're a patient lot.
The shadow was shifting with the sun, and it looked like it was starting to inflate.
Oh, maybe. Maybe when it dissociates from the other shadow, then the nipple will perk up.
Looking kind of perky now.
Yeah. We stood on that corner for over an hour, sunlight in our eyes, squinting up at St. Mary's and coaxing the shadow to fill out and achieve its full-bosomed potential. But it never did.
I think the shadow looks like nothing. No thing that you can describe. It just looks like a regular old shadow.
I think it looks like a sailboat.
So it's possible that maybe this isn't the optimal time of year for viewing too.
But if you find yourself on the corner of Rose and Octavia at the right time of year, at the right time of day, maybe you'll be lucky enough to see the shadow in all its curvaceous glory. At St. Mary's Cathedral, aka Our Lady of Maytag, in San Francisco, I'm Amber Miles for Cross Currents.
Amber recently graduated from KALW's Audio Academy. You can find more Hay Area stories generated by listeners like you at KALW.org. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Janae Darden, Nina Ginsler-Debs, Mary Franklin Harvin, Sarah Harrison, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Drew Gwynn, Priscilla Wilson, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. The music we're listening to is Like Love from Oakland. They're playing at the Octopus Literary Salon tomorrow. The show is free and starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.